Yes, Hatikva. Tomorrow is Yom HaAtzma'ut. Today was Yom HaZikaron, and it's Sfira, so it's a very, very mixed up time. For those of you who are new to the program, I welcome you. I thank the Jewish State for the wonderful article that they published about my program, and I did receive a few phone calls from friends from Middlesex and Monmouth counties and Union counties, those where the Jewish State is read, and it was good to hear from you and to know that many of you are tuning in this evening. And Saul, thank you for the call. And so, as I mentioned, it's a little mixed up, so we will start our first selection. Certainly appropriate for Yom HaZikaron, all the thousands of young, brave Jewish soldiers, Israelis who were murdered in all the wars, and of course, who were injured. I think the Kel Mole is certainly appropriate. This is from a concert that took place at Lincoln Center on December 21st of 2003. It was in tribute to Yessel Rosenblatt, and those of you who attended it will recall that Yaakov Stark made his debut. Actually, it was his debut with Cantor's World, and you know, the rest is history. So let's go back to that evening, and again, for Yom HaZikaron, we're playing Kel Mole Rachamim. This is Cantor Yaakov Stark.
Kel Mole Rachamim Shocheini Bawa Mirohomi Huamtzi Minuch Nikhoino Tachas Kan efe ashechino b'mahalos kidoshim Es nishma I'm gonna do it. yastireil b'seiser kenafav liyoyla amin. Bitzror bitzror achayim es nishmosol v'adoyno.
Well, of course, people were a little overwhelmed. They started to applaud. That was Yaakov Stark with the Kel Mole. For those of you who are new to the program, and I understand there are a few new listeners, the normal setup is that the first hour is a mixture of Hasidic and Yiddish and Israeli and comedy and the like. And the second hour is strictly Chazonis. But during this Sfira time, I've changed the lineup, and there'll be a lot of Chazonis this evening. As a matter of fact, in about 10 or 15 minutes, our friend Daniel Schwartz will be joining us and presenting some live davening that was from his private collection, and it will certainly be of great interest to many of you. But let's go back now to the UN in November 1947, and those were certainly historic moments. And let's hear the vote at the United Nations. This is November 1947.
On November 29th, 1947.
We will proceed the roll call. You all know how to vote. Those who are in favor will say yes, those who are against will say no, and the abstainers always they know what to say.
We will start it now.
Afghanistan, no. Argentina, abstention. Australia, yes. Belgium, yes. Bolivia, yes. Brazil, yes. Belarusia, yes.
The final vote on the United Nations Canada. Palestine partition resolution, yes, had begun. Chile. The galleries were filled with tense and anxious spectators.
Abstention.
Some of the votes were hardly unexpected.
Iran? No. Iraq? No. Lebanon? No. Soviet Union? Yes. United Kingdom? Abstain. The United States? Yes. Uruguay? Yes. Venezuela? Yes. Yemen? No. Yugoslavia? Abstain. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
The news reached Tel Aviv at midnight, and the world tuned in on Mogrebi Square.
A good cross-section of Tel Aviv's population is here tonight, about 20,000 jam-packed in Mogrebi Square, where loudspeakers have been set up to announce the result of the important vote that's now taking place in New York. People are standing on top of trucks and buses, hanging over balconies and out of windows, perched on top of street lamps and telephone poles, all waiting for the momentous word that may spell victory or defeat for their 2,000-year dream of a Jewish homeland. I think you can hear that loudspeaker now. What is it? That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Partition pass 33-13, and is this crowd excited? They're starting their horror dances now. All over the square, little circles are forming. People are laughing and crying and shouting and whirling around in the wild horror dance. Perhaps you can hear it now. They're starting to sing Hatikva, the Jewish national anthem, away off in a corner of the square, and gradually the horror dances are breaking up and people are taking up the refrain of Hatikva. All around me, I can see Jews weeping unashamed while they sing. Let's listen to them.
As I've said many times on other programs, I have many, many versions of Hatikva, but certainly that is perhaps the most stirring one. It must have been an incredible experience to be there. And I was listening to that, and it was 1947. The war was over 2 years earlier, and I was 11 years old at the time, and I had no awareness of the Holocaust and the creation of the State of Israel. I guess I was somewhat aware of it, but it took many years for me to really appreciate the historic times that I was living through. And certainly since then, there are many, many historic events happening in our lifetimes, to say the least. In any event, let's hear another appropriate song. We're going to be, as I say, getting to some live chazanis in a little while, but this is Ozzy Schwartz with Avinu Sheba Shemayim, a prayer for the State of Israel.
Shamayim Tzur Yisrael V'goalo Avinu Avinu Shema Shamayim Tzur Yisrael V'goalo Barech Barech Israel, Reshit.
Hazek, Hazek,
Hazek, Hazek,
Hazek, Hazek, Hazek, et yedei meginei, eretz koreshenu,
eretz koreshenu.
So Avinu Sheba Shemayim, and that was Ozzie Schwartz. And this is Charlie Bernhout welcoming some new listeners from Central Jersey. Again, I thank the Jewish State for the wonderful article that they put in the paper about my exploits, and a lot of it started in Highland Park. And speaking of Highland Park, I'll be there this Wednesday evening giving a presentation to the Hadassah. That will be at the Congregation Avos Achim. And this coming Sunday, I received this notice that at Congregation Nevi Sholom in Metuchen, there will be a concert at 3 p.m. There are many fans of Debbie Friedman, and that will be this coming Sunday at 3. Benefit concert for Congregation Nevi Shalom, 250 Grove Avenue in Metuchen. Okay, one more selection, and we'll be getting to Daniel Schwartz. And again, we're in Sfira, and it's certainly appropriate that we hear Moshe Schulhoff, who is a wonderful cantor, and his version of Pinchik's Ribono Shel Olam. This is Moshe Schulhoff.
Ribono shel olam, ribono shel olam, ribono shel olam.
stato si vissono Alide Moshe avdeicho Lis poir se fira suo emer Riboi noi shelo eloau Riboi noi shelo elam Riboi noi shelo elam Atol tivi soan Alide Moshe avdeicho Lis poir Tu moi sei nu hiri boi noi shelo elo che moi se cosanto vi soi non secho e soi non secho u se fare teme lo che Shamus Ashvis Tis Peruchami Oh, you should have
That was Moshe Shulhoff with the Bono Shalom, and I'm very pleased to have with me live and on the air a dear friend, Daniel Schwartz. Good evening, Daniel.
Hi, how are you, Charlie? Hello, everybody.
Okay, a distinguished attorney and a chazan and a great fan of chazanis. Welcome.
Thank you. You're too kind.
Well, Dan, you know, it's always a pleasure to meet the those who share my craziness.
Chazanut is either something which is a very enriching experience, or it's something which becomes a life-consuming obsession. So I'll say the same. It's nice to find somebody similarly obsessed.
Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you first come to chazanis?
Well, musically, I began studying the piano when I was 4 years old. I came from a fairly musical family. My father played the violin, not very well, but he played the violin. He started taking studying it when he was about 42, 43 years old. My sister is a wonderful pianist. I don't think anybody plays, in my opinion, a Chopin etude better than she can. She doesn't perform publicly, but I still hear her play fairly often. I began studying the piano when I was 4 years old.
Where was this, by the way? Where was this? Where were you raised?
This was in Southfield, Michigan, where I grew up, the suburban suburb, northwest suburb of Detroit.
Oh,
rather large Jewish community. My introduction to Chazonis really began. Let me say like this: like most people of my generation, Chazonis was not something which was part of my shul experience. The Orthodox congregations in suburban Detroit did not have anything approaching professional chazonim. Sometime, I would say, on Yom Kippur, 1977, 1978, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, during the break on Yom Kippur in our shul, my father took a walk over to a conservative congregation called Shaarei Tzedek, which is one of the leading conservative congregations in the world. Then, back then, the chazan there was cantor Jacob Barkin, who was an inconquerable cantor. Golden Age trained and bred chazan with a big, booming tenor voice. And I remember walking into shul. My father walked over to hear him during the break from our shul. And I remember being awed by the experience. There were about 3,500 people in this shul. And he was there at the front of it, and singing. I think we got there in the middle somewhere of the Avoda, and it was just absolutely awesome. That was my first exposure to Chazonis, and I was constantly pestering my father after that to please take me back to Shaarei Tzedek, because I wanted to hear the Chazon.
Daniel, this is so beshert. I don't think I told you this. I was contacted by Jacob Barkin's nephew a few months ago. And it was interesting because he had been trying to get recordings of his uncle, and they just didn't exist. And they were in some of the archives, but once it's in an archive, it's very hard. They have all sorts of restrictions about copying and sending them out. So I went through my collection, and I came up with, I think, 6 or 7 albums of Barkin. And I made copies of them, and I sent them to him, and I said, I want to do a special, and this is going to be with Barkin's son and this nephew. I think they're from, he's from Michigan. And I was on the phone with him actually yesterday. I'm going to do the interview next week, and I actually may be playing a 1 hour of Jacob Barkin. So that's really wild. I mean, it was quite beshert.
I'll say this. Anybody who really likes Chazanut and wants to really hear a master of the craft will be carried in very good stead to listen to that hour of Barkin.
Okay.
he was just a very, very powerful, wonderful chazan.
Yes, yes.
And then just to finish the story out quickly. After my bar mitzvah, I asked my father if he would teach me to daven for the Omid Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He himself was not a chazan. He davened only once for the Omid in his life, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur.
Uh-huh.
And that was during World War II in a Hungarian forced labor brigade. He was a boy there. He knew the entire machzor by heart.
Really?
And therefore he davened for the Omid. But he had a very, very good knowledge, rudimentary knowledge of Nusach. And he began to teach me. And I started davening for the Omid when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, yeah. And I'm quite proud to say, with the exception of 1 year that I was learning in yeshiva in Jerusalem, I have davened every Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur since I'm 15 years old.
Wow.
For the Omid.
Well, and currently you're in Muncie, is it?
I live up in Rockland County,
County.
In the Muncie area.
Yes.
Hopefully this year again I'll be able to, krieg out an Omid.
Yes.
And then I went when I started Yeshiva University. I began to study in the Bell School of Jewish Music, mainly with Chazan Malavani, who was my primary teacher.
Uh-huh.
Of Chazanut. Couldn't ask for a better one.
Sure.
And then after college, while I was in law school, I had private voice teachers, and I've continued to study And I have to tell you, Charlie, that your blogs and the forums that you've developed have enabled me really to get deeper and deeper into the scholarship of Chazanut. Because as one begins writing it, one begins getting into disputes and into controversies on those forums. you have to know what you're talking about.
For sure, and there's been some very interesting dialogues.
Which forced me to buy books and forced me again to read the books and to expand my the knowledge base. So I thank you for that tremendously.
Well, okay, we need some gatherings of the bloggers, you know, let them come out.
Well, we've met. A number of us have
met.
And
yes. No knives were thrown at one another.
No. As a matter of fact, the ones who I had loudest disputes with online are actually some of my closest friends in terms of the cantorial world. So, that's always a good thing.
Yes. Well, you've been to many of the kumsitzes, and I think one of my goals is to bring about more of the kumsitzes because they were very special.
I think those are very special events. I think those are wonderful events. They're an intimate setting, very friendly setting, very, very nice crowd of people. I enjoy them very much.
Yeah. Well, it's one of my goals. One of my missions is to revive that.
That would be good.
You were kind enough. I know you have an extensive collection of live davenings, and we decided, you and I, that for the remaining part of this program, we're going to hear some outstanding recordings from live davenings. What is the first one that we'll be hearing?
The first one we'll be listening to is a live Maariv by Leib Glantz. What you call the publication of Jerry Glantz's book in memory of his father, Chazan Glantz, is, in my opinion, one of the most significant events to happen cantorially in quite some time. It's a marvelous, marvelous book. And I would encourage any lover of Chazanut or anybody who's interested in learning more about Glantz, you absolutely must buy that book and read it. It's a very important volume.
It's called "He Speaks with God," I think.
The Man Who Spoke to God, yes.
Yeah.
I'll be publishing a review of it in the July issue of the Hakira Journal out of Brooklyn. I found on the internet there were a live Maariv from Leib Glantz. I'm not sure exactly when it was, but it was sometime in the late 1950s or early 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Glantz davened the Chanukah Maariv in his shul in Tel Aviv, the Tiferet Tzvi Synagogue. And there's a recording of the first 15 minutes of the Maariv. It's not a very long Maariv, but it's an absolutely beautiful, wonderful Maariv, and it's really emblematic of the way Glantz davened and when the principles of Chazanut that he stood for. Before you play it, for those listeners who are a bit musically trained, the thing to listen to very carefully is in the first bracha, Amari Varovim, he goes in extensively into what's called the pentatonic scale, which was something very important to Glantz. He wrote extensively about it. He felt it was among the oldest scales and motifs used in authentic Jewish music. And it's no surprise that he references it tremendously in this Maariv. The other thing to listen for is in the Micha Malcha section, he actually has the choir sing his composition from Maos Tzor. Glantz was very against traditional melody from Maos Tzor, and he established with a fair amount of evidence that the melody came from a 16th century German church melody. and he felt that a tune with such origins was inappropriate for what he termed the national song of the Jewish people, and therefore he composed his own melody, which is incorporated in this Maariv. That's how you know, even if you wouldn't know, you know, there was a Chanukah Maariv. If you listen to it, you hear that melody, obviously you would know, if you know Glantz's music, that this had to have been a Chanukah Maariv that he davened.
Okay,
so why don't we play that?
Okay, coming up right now, Leib Glantz from a live davening.
Leva siva Thank you. Hey!
Well, wow, this is quite a davening, to say the least.
Indeed it is. I'll tell you, any time you listen to Glantz, at least when I do, it takes a little bit of effort to remember that there was Chazanut before him and there was Chazanut after him.
Well, he certainly wasn't original, that's
yes.
For sure. And I'm trying to think, is there anybody who comes close to that kind of originality today?
No. I mean, I can't think of anybody, and this is one of the real problems which is plaguing the field of cantorial music today, is that people feel that there is no room for creativity anymore. The commercial aspects of it, I think, have come to dominate, and artists are afraid to be individualistic, and they're afraid to be creative in their own way, because they know it's safer to sing the time-honored